Hi, friends. Welcome to The Butter Dish. Before we dive into today's episode, just wanted to thank you and take a moment for being here with us at The Butter Dish. Heidi and I kind of can't believe that we've got a podcast, but whether it's episode one you're joining us for or 31, we are incredibly grateful for your open-mindedness, your patience with us, as well as your willingness to evolve and change the way that you think or consider the way that you think. So without further ado, we want to introduce you to episode 31 with our friend Amber Brazicki of Biceps After Babies, where we talk all about quitting. Enjoy the episode.
You had it?
Yes. What are our names again?
Been that kind of morning?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes. I would like to say it's just the morning, but I feel like it's just kind of my life.
All right. Hey there. Welcome to The Butter Dish. I'm Heidi Ballard.
And I'm Natalie Dulaney. And today we're joined by Kim Schlug. All right, Kim, for those who don't know who you are, tell us about yourself.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on, ladies. I'm thrilled to be here. Such a great place to be. Love your content and really enjoy getting to hear from you all the time. So it's great to be on here chatting with you. So my name's Kim. I live in the suburbs of Philadelphia. I'm 51 years old. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a nutrition coach. Just by default over the years, I've ended up working with women over 40, just because I talked about my own journey of the things I struggled with over 40. And after a while, had so many of those clients, I started just focusing on those clients and their needs and how to help them. So I work fully online with women over 40, helping them get strong, lose weight, improve their relationship with food, those kinds of things.
Awesome. I wanted to ask you, when did you start? How long have you been a personal trainer?
I was 43 when I started lifting. So I'm 51 now. And I had, when I was a teenager, I tried so hard to be an athlete because that's what everybody in my high school did who was like in the cool crowd. And I had field hockey and lacrosse. At church, we played basketball. So I played basketball. I was never good at any of that stuff. Like, put me with a ball and it doesn't add up. I kind of like gave up my idea that I was ever going to be any kind of athlete. And all through my 20s, all through my 30s, into my 40s, like I would never have considered myself in any way, shape or form athletic. And I was always trying to like lose a little weight in my 20s. By the time I was in my 30s with my children, every time I got pregnant, I gained 50 pounds and I never really lost it all before I had the next one. So by the end of my 30s, I was obese and really struggling with that. And I kept trying to figure out, how do I get rid of it? How do I get rid of it? And I tried lots of things. And some of it bordered on strength training, like Jillian Michaels videos, but it was never like true strength training. And I didn't start doing that until I was 43.
Wow. Gosh, I love it. I feel like you're speaking to like a really large demographic of women that I definitely feel like I identify with as well. But at the same time, we're kind of like an underserved population because I feel like you have, you know, obviously fitness is very obvious for like the 20-year-old set and even like the early 30-year-old set, right? Whether it's like pre-children or like right around college or like things like that. And then you have like some women who have just kind of naturally like had like an aptitude for fitness their whole life. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I've been like, ever since I was like eight, I've been athletic, you know, and like those kind of people. Then you have like those like myself who it's like, well, I definitely never felt like I was an athlete, you know, like the 10-minute mile told me that in middle school, right? So like right off the bat, it was like, that was not my thing. And then, yeah, I like dabbled in swimming and stuff, but swimming you weren't really an athlete because real athletes were running, right? Or they were playing some kind of like ball related, right?
Yeah,
like
coordination required.
Exactly. Where, you know, swimming was like what older people do, right? Older people swim, right? And water and aerobic fitness, right? Yeah. So I felt like, even though now looking at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, no, swimming and water polo and all that kind of stuff is
very much
a sport, right? But like then I didn't believe that. And then also it's like, then you get into like, yeah, this time where you are having children and, you know, obviously to be a good mother, you burn yourself down and don't do anything for yourself. So I fully subscribe to that too. Right. And then I felt like here I am, you know, heading into like the end of like my last baby, same story as yours, like definitely kept the pounds on after baby. And then you end up in your like 30s and you're like, oh crap. So 40 is when everything supposedly goes.
Totally.
Pop, right.
Well, and it's so interesting too, as you were telling your story, how you hearken back to high school as like the determiner whether or not you're an athlete and like how many decisions we make about ourselves. Same with me. Like all of my siblings were athletes. They all lettered in a sport except for me. Didn't, you know, I have seven siblings. There's seven of us or whatever. But my point is like, it's so interesting how we make these decisions about ourselves at such a young age.
Yeah. We define ourselves by these things that we're just like, I am this, I am not that.
Yeah.
And so for decades, I was like, I am not athletic. I am not a sporty person. That's not who I am. And that's
totally,
that was accepted in my mind as fact.
Right. Just reality.
I remember like, as I started like getting in shape and really falling in love with strength training at 43. And then, you know, a year and a half later, like I'm a personal trainer now because I just started liking helping people do this. And then by 45, I was competing in powerlifting. And I was like, I would have never, if somebody would have said like, when I was 20, like in your 40s, you're going to compete in lifting weights. I would have been like, you're out of your mind. Like I would never do that.
Oh, much less not even competing, but even caring about lifting weights. Yes. Like, I think that we have that same exact experience because we definitely didn't find fitness until like our like mid to late 30s. It's like more like, oh, maybe I'm actually okay at this. Right. And how interesting it is if you really do believe that you're not really an athlete, like you've decided that from yourself at like whatever age you decided, the only thing for you to do to change your body is weight loss. So then you adopt decades and decades of weight loss because you're like, well, I'm not an athlete. So in order to look a certain way, my only option is losing weight, right? Yeah. And becoming like beholden to this dieting, endless dieting, right? Which we've seen, right? Between the three of us, like how many women who've said, I've been literally dieting since I've been 13 and they're like 53.
Yeah.
It's like four decades of dieting and yet we're still chasing it.
Right? Yeah. Which is such an interesting time. And maybe underserved as we may be, maybe we're actually the luckiest in a way, because right around the time you think that your life is like over, you realize like, oh, actually this is just the beginning.
Gosh,
I really hope that we're leaving, we're going to be leaving a legacy for our daughters of not thinking of their 40s and their 50s as old age.
Yeah.
And like, it's all downhill, because I distinctly remember it's like thinking like, when I was, I just assumed by the time I was in my 50s, I'd be like wearing like sweaters that showed each season with a little, I'd have like pin curls and like in the sun, in the spring, I'd be wearing my sweater with my tulips and my tulip pin and my little curls in my hair. And I'd be like, I don't know.
You should still do that.
Right. And that's fine if somebody wants to do that, but that's what I thought I would be, an old woman at this age.
Totally.
So what my daughter sees me doing at this age is starting a business and lifting weights and trying to decide like, hey, do I still think I might decide to be a runner at some point? Like I haven't even made decisions about certain things that I haven't even tried yet. And she sees that. And I want her to like go into that knowing like there's a whole life ahead of you at 51.
100%. Which is like, how do we bottle everything we just said? Because when people come and say, I want to lose weight to build my confidence, it's like this mindset shift is where the confidence comes from. It's not from to your point, like losing weight.
Or how many times do we need to rewrite the fact that I want to lose weight for my children to be a better example? It's like the example comes from the things you do, not the things that you constantly obsess and talk about. Right? It's like, I mean, so I think true. That like our children right now, I mean, my daughters don't even have like an idea that like the scale is something other than like, this is how strong you are, or like at the doctor's office more. It's like, so what did you deadlift today? Mm-hmm. Or like, what are you doing today? And it's like, I think the things we normalize and the things we talk about and the things that we're interested in, like it really is transformative as far as like setting the pace for your children as far as what they care about.
Right? Totally. And like, and getting away from this idea of like, well, I'm not going to do that because that's not me. Like as if like at 14, 15, 16, you've already decided what you are and what you aren't. And period, the end, you know?
And it's so, it's like,
speaking of period, the end, period. We're going to talk about menopause later.
Yes. The end of periods. Yes. I agree with you. I'm really, really grateful that I actually found this later in life than earlier in life, in the sense that like, I mean, yes, we can always be like, oh, if only I would have started this in my 20s, but like, who knows what those 20s and 30s would have created in me now, right? As far as like from like a chasing this like past iteration of myself or at the peak of my like fitness and da 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 da. It's like right now I'm still working on what that peak of my fitness is. And I kind of love that trajectory because it's like, I haven't quite reached that yet. So I have definitely more to look forward to from the sense of like, we're just going to keep going with this.
Yes.
Right.
Well, totally. And yeah, this just really focusing on not only the peak of your, even if you have peaked previously, it's still like, well, what's your best at 43? Right. Not as opposed to having 26 or whatever be your all time best. Agreed. It is YTD.
So why don't we talk a little bit about, and I want everyone who's listening, and maybe you don't, you're not quite 40 yet, or you're not 50 yet, or you're not 60 yet, but maybe, you know, first of all, it's coming for you.
Yeah, hopefully.
Better hopefully. Hope.
Yeah, God willing. But let's also just talk about generally things that maybe we grew up believing and things that we like have had thoughts about as far as like, you know, air quote fitness goes. And also just kind of like, I think there is this fountain of youth that people chase through fitness and weight loss and aesthetics, but at the same time, like, let's definitely identify things that, like, you know, we talked about them a little bit before we hopped on with you about, like, we call them old lady traps, but like things that might be actually keeping you trapped mm-hmm. from getting into this better version of yourself, right, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, similar to what we were, what you said just a few minutes ago about, like, that was just reality to me. I didn't realize that that was a, just an assumption that I chose to believe. Mm-hmm. And so, and a lot of these, I think there is a movement to disseminate this, like the lies that these are, but still there's a lot of people who, whether they're stressed or, you know, it's an old stressful belief that they have that they're going back to, they don't realize that they're made up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
and especially like if you're somebody who is like right around 40 or 50, like you've lived through a lot of so-called truths about yes. diet and exercise, right? Like here's, this is the right and this is the wrong. And if you add them all up, like you, there's literally nothing you're allowed to eat at this point to survive because you're cannot. Like I remember living like the snack wells lifestyle. Do you guys remember?
Totally. Yes. Yeah. Weight Watchers, everything fat free. Points, 100 yep. CalPacks. 100 oh my CalPacks gosh. Are like my favorite.
Really? Yeah. And like butter's bad for you. So which is the one that, you know,
right. Don't eat
our namesake.
Margarine. Don't, yeah. You have to eat, low fat. Fat is definitely going to be.
What the about, thing. I can't believe it's not butter.
Oh my God.
All of these things, right. And one by one, they've like seeped into our consciousness. And so often women, when they come to me, they don't even realize all that's in there.
Yes.
Start pressing back about these things. You know, they're struggling to do whatever it is that, you know, we've said is their goal. And I have to keep asking questions like, what's the struggle? And what we unearth is like all of these thoughts that are in their head that they're not even fully conscious. Like why they're not eating this whole host of, like, they seem to be struggling to figure out what to eat when there's so many options. And it's because in their mind, all of these are not options because you can't eat this.
Oh
this,
my gosh, you're this, so, you're right? so right so about well that. Said. And the craziest part about it is like, we don't realize even what we're doing because we're literally stocking our fridges with all these things for our families too. And so we're raising a generation of kids who are all either, you know, whatever our food beliefs are, we're
building, passing them down.
We're passing them down mm-hmm. because literally what our fridge looks like. So I want to dive into some of those because I think it's definitely, and we're not, we don't want anyone to feel shame that they've believed this way because there was definitely a lot of air quote convincing arguments. And even still currently people are still pushing these things out there. So it is, it's hard when you have a family member who maybe has had weight loss, who has done things this way, or you see certain diets that are popular, like, you know, out there that like have shown results or people have actually done them before. I mean, yeah. even Weight Watchers, you know, and I've done Weight Watchers before too, like has had its set of air quote food rules, South Beach food rules, you know? Oh, so totally. It's like, so these, it's not to make you feel bad about things that you've done before, but it's more about to get you guys to question what are maybe some of these traps that you don't really know that you have, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's even like, I can't have that. Well, what can't you have and why can't you have it? Versus it just being like, instead of just maybe saying out loud, like, oh, well, you know, pineapple is the devil.
Right.
It's super bad for me because it's fruit and it's sugar. It's like, okay, well, let's like really talk about like, is pineapple really the devil?
Right.
It does cut your mouth up. Yeah, you have
seriously.
Much,
but, you know. Or maybe you just, again, like you were saying, Kim, like it pineapple doesn't even show up on the list because you've X'd it out. Oh. Yeah. Just like, I'm not an athlete, so I'm not even going to consider doing that. Like it doesn't even enter my mind. So go ahead.
So why don't we like debunk some of these? Like, I mean, I know I would love to say like once and for all, right? Yeah. But I mean, I know that you
good luck with that.
Yeah, seriously.
But I mean, even if it just gets you a little bit curious, or even if it gives you pause, or even if you're yelling back at the podcast, like, no, I know that's actually not true. This is why I believe that carbs are bad for you. Whatever it is, like, let's just bring some stuff up so that way maybe you can mm-hmm. like question your beliefs about things. So let's start with our favorite, carbs are bad for you, which we can also tie into sugar.
Yes.
Is also, you know, or I'm addicted to sugar, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I can't have it.
Yeah. So I tried to cut sugar out once. I come from a home. I love my mom. My mom is fantastic. She is an incredible person, but wow, she had messed up ideas about diet. Like, mm-hmm. and was never like, when I look back, I'm like, that woman was never overweight a day in her life, but she was always trying to lose weight and always had all kinds of diet schemes. Right. And one time when I was I don't know, maybe in my early 20s, I think it was, she's like, she bought this book and I don't remember what it was. I can picture the book in my mind. It was red on the top and white on the bottom with these sugar cubes and some scary headline about sugar and how we're going to cut out sugar. And so she gets me to agree that we're cutting out sugar. So, and it was supposed to be for some extended period of time, weeks. I maybe made it like 7 days, maybe 8 days.
That's
it
amazing.
It was terrible. Yeah. It was a horrible week. And I look back, I'm thinking, what did I think I was going to accomplish? Because like in my mind, like I still needed chocolate. And so I drove like really far to the only
at
that time to buy like carob or something that still had the flavor.
Oh, yeah. Or cacao because it was a healthy chocolate.
Right. Because I was trying to look for these loopholes to this rule that had been made like, okay, sugar is bad for you. So you have to find the loopholes. And that started for me way back there. Here's what I would say with things like that with sugar. And importantly, that book was written by a doctor. And that is a thing that tripped me up year after year, trying to figure out like, how do I lose weight? If this book is written by a doctor, clearly it's right because he or she is a doctor. Mm. And what people don't realize is one, many doctors have almost no training in weight loss nutrition, like almost zero or zero. Okay. Yep. And they are experts in a lot of things, specific, whatever it is their medical specialty is, but that does not make them an expert in everything. It does not make them an expert on your body and how you should lose weight. And so don't take the fact that a person is a doctor as a seal of this person knows what they're talking about. Because if we lined up all those doctors' books, again, there's no food left to eat.
Well, agreed. And like, just to pause real quick, you know, Heidi has a brother who's a doctor, and my sister and my brother-in-law are doctors, and they will actually admit to you that they actually don't know that much about nutrition. Like they'll come and talk to us about like macro counting and like nutrition things and like exercise. They're like, we know a lot about a lot of things, but this is definitely not our specialty or our area of expertise,
right?
Which I love that they're willing to say that they don't know, because I think there are a lot of doctors who are like, well, I'm a doctor.
Yeah.
Like that's like, it's just like, oh, I'm a lawyer. It's like, okay, well, what does that even mean? Right. So it's like, to your point, yes, it's like just because there's some letters after their name, you still have to understand that they're also just people with opinions as well, regardless of their training. You know, I mean, I'm not diminishing doctors, love them so much.
Yes.
We have so many.
Yes.
But even to the point too about PhDs, you know, people are like, oh, they're a PhD, they must know everything about everything. No, they have a PhD in that specific area of research.
They know so a it's whole like, lot about that thing. They
exactly. Are like my dad can like, yeah, he's a civil engineer, but he doesn't know nothing about counting macros, right? But yeah. He's a PhD. So same kind of point, like let's also be aware, you know, there's definitely people on Instagram who have doctor at the end of their name giving information out. But to your point, like let's objectively look at who we're getting the information from.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though like, you know, like my sister has had very successful weight loss doing keto. It's keto is a strategy that can create weight loss because it creates a calorie deficit. It's not because there's something inherently fat gaining about carbs.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And look, if anybody out there is like, I just know it does not going to work for me, I would say to try it. And this is what I tell people all the time. If you are curious, if you see people, like I said, which one of you, Natalie, I think it was you. Was it who? No, whichever one of you was like shoving a donut and you're like, how do you eat donuts? I was looking at one. I was like, I couldn't remember. It made me laugh. So if you see people who like, or they're like, they look like they're in shape and like, I see them like eating donuts all the time. Like that's, how is that possible for them? It can be possible for you. Try it. Like try, go 30, 60 days, make sure you're in a calorie deficit because you're not going to lose weight if you're not. And at the same time, eat a donut every day, every three, whatever it is that makes it comfortable. A day, every day could be done, but it likely is going to mean the rest of your meals aren't as delicious as you want, because you might not have room for that cheese on your salad or whatever, but you know, have a donut a couple times a week and see like, can I lose weight and eat donuts? It's a way that people don't really think about. Like you can test this stuff out on yourself.
Well, and I agreed completely. And if that's a little too challenging to do in a calorie deficit, like try that in maintenance, try incorporating all these foods that you have judgments about for sure. Because it is those judgments, you think they're keeping you safe, but that's what's complicating the entire process. Just like you were talking about like driving over to the next town to get chocolate or whatever, it drives you to these very extreme behaviors. And one of the, which under that umbrella is extreme overeating, because like this last meal mentality of like, I know I'm being naughty, so I'm going to just hurry and eat it all. And it, you're not being naughty. You can eat whatever you want.
Which is why generationally, if you look at the majority of our women who are like binge and restrictors are from our generations, right? Is because we've been told to go without so many things that's really the only way for anyone to get anything in, but also by guilting themselves at the same time.
Well, totally. And with no information about any kind of in between, we're indoctrinated as teenagers about how losing weight and being skinny increases your social value. At the same time, they teach you how to be anorexic and bulimic as like a cautionary tale. But a lot of girls I knew were like, oh, so that's how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good point. It's a really good point.
And then also shocker, also all or nothing thinking.
Yeah. Wow. Totally. I mean, that's so represented in that, in disordered eating.
So let's persist with this, all the things you can't do.
Let's do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Eating at night because you'll gain tons and tons of weight, mm-hmm. which let's dispel it. The fact is that like,
don't eat after seven.
Don't eat after seven. Yes. Right. That was like wasn't that an Oprah rule too? Right.
Oh, was it? I don't even know.
I remember her.
I mean, a lot to say about weight loss.
I know. Poor Oprah.
Love her so much. And then also, but don't eat in the morning.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, you have the background noise, like breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but not in this case.
It's true.
Not for you.
It's really confusing, right? And it's hard to pick apart. And what I would say, if you're confused by this, yeah, it's because you're being sent all these different messages. So again, I would come back to what feels good in your life. My daughter does not feel good when she eats breakfast. Like she doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I think she got it from my mom. My mom doesn't feel good when she eats breakfast. And so like, I don't push my daughter to eat breakfast. Like she doesn't have to eat breakfast and there's no reason for you to eat breakfast, but there's also, I love breakfast. Like it is my favorite meal of the day. And I do like to eat in the morning. And so if you're a person, whichever one of those camps you fall into, eat then or don't eat then. What mm-hmm. really matters is that you're getting in enough total nutrition to support, you know, the type of training that you do, the lifestyle you lead, that you're getting in a lot of micronutrition. And that if you have some aesthetic goal, that your calories are in line with that goal, whether that's gaining muscle or losing fat, we want to make sure that the total number of calories is there in line with that. And within those parameters, you can eat at 1 a.m. if that's when you're up. If you're a shift worker, like, the timing isn't the thing that matters, unless it somehow matters that it helps you. It doesn't help you in reaching your goal. So if you are a person who late at night, if you tend to eat, you tend to overeat, okay, then maybe you stopping eating at 7 is going to be useful for you. I will say that is historically what has helped me. If I'm sitting around at night and I'm eating a lot, I will eat too much. Other people, they're like, I can be totally moderate late at night. It really is. It is so dependent on the individual. And I think it's a great thing that you can make it fit your lifestyle. Whatever your goals are, food can work for you.
Right. And the only time constraints you have is 24 hours. So unless you're exceeding that somehow and you have a 48 hour day, then sure, like you should probably create some strategies around that, but like really 24 hours. And I think just as you have like people who are morning people and like night owls, there's also same kind of feeding patterns too. Like I'm not a breakfast person. Heidi's a total breakfast person. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely like a late night eater. And it's actually, I don't actually remember who posted it the other day. And I thought it was actually really ironically kind of profound. It's like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I struggle with night eating. It's like your struggle with night eating is a day eating issue, not necessarily a night eating issue. And I think it's interesting how that probably is born from that, like after 7 kind of like everything after 7, everything goes to hell after 7, right? Or like, you know, but it's like really like, are you not eating enough in the day because you're trying to do certain things that your nights become like this huge feeding frenzy? Right. Yeah. But also to your point too, like it might be depends on the personality, right? Like maybe you are paced out through the day and then just after 7, things get a little bit more comfortable and more relaxed. And like, that's probably where that mindset was built in from. But at the same time, to your points, like 24 hours is what you have. And depending on your natural body rhythm and what you like, don't shame yourself for the way you eat. Like if you love breakfast, have breakfast.
Oh, totally.
Because right? I know that we'll get people like in our program, like, I'm not really a breakfast person, but I know I'm supposed to eat breakfast. So what am I supposed to eat? It's like, if you don't want to eat breakfast and you don't like eating breakfast, don't eat breakfast.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and similarly, like we were talking about with like the extreme behaviors, if you're noticing this as a recurring issue for you, first of all, realize like, you're not alone. This is very common for many people. And it could be because you're underfeeding yourself. It could be because you're not getting enough sleep. It could be it's also likely, you're low on self-care. As three of us know, willpower is a finite resource. You can renew it. You can fill your cup back up. But, by the end of the night, a lot of times your willpower is just done. And so that makes it a lot, you're looking for good feelings, easy, good feelings somewhere. And food really, from a chemical reaction standpoint, it does help with that. So just reminding yourself that there are lots of ways to feel good. And if you overeat sometimes, so what? So what? We all do. It's not a big deal. Forgive yourself, ask yourself some questions, practice some awareness about, you know, if you look back in your day and you realize, wow, I hardly had a chance to sit down, or you're under a exponential life stress, or you don't understand why you're doing the things that you're doing. That's a great opportunity to get curious instead of judgy. Mm-hmm. Overeating doesn't make you a bad person. It might make you a person that, you know, with an opportunity to learn something about yourself.
And also, let's also just say out loud that overeating doesn't mean anything over nothing.
Yeah.
Like, overeating still definitely has its parameters. Like, you have a maintenance calorie range that you need,
mm-hmm.
like, before you even hit into like a place where you are eating over that amount.
Yes.
So if you are the type of person that anytime I eat anything, period, I'm overeating.
Mm. Or anything I eat, anytime I eat anything good.
Yeah, that means I'm overeating. It's like, let's also be like appropriate with the context and the words that you use about what your actions are too.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy for women who are eating 1100 calories to think that they're overeating.
Such
when
a great
in reality,
point.
You're undereating.
Yeah.
So like, let's also be have a little awareness and compassion about that too. Cause a lot of women think they're overeaters, and they're quite frankly undereaters.
Yep.
And that,
so
that,
true.
That just also spurns the whole problem.
Yeah. Right. So it's, maybe one of the questions you should ask yourself is actually, am I overeating?
Am I overeating? Like, what evidence do I actually have that that's the case?
Yeah.
How do I know that I'm overeating? This would be a good time to maybe spend a week like tracking, like, what am I actually eating? If you're not tracking, to see like, okay, numerically, what am I eating? And how does that compare for a person trying to maintain their weight, who is my size? There are plenty of women who are under eating, and there are plenty of other women who are overeating calories, but under nourishing themselves because they're not eating enough nourishing foods. And I think a lot of us have historically tried to fill voids with food. One pattern I see a lot in moms who are really busy and always giving of themselves is this revenge nighttime eating. I did it a lot because I gave of myself all day long to my kids. And when they were all in bed by 8 o'clock at night, it was me time. And for me, like, what am I going to do? Go out? Like, they're still here. They're little kids. I'm not going anywhere. Right. And for a lot of women, this is where alcohol comes in. I was not a person. I don't drink. And so for me, it was food. It was cereal. It was ice cream. It was big bowls of these things. It was a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And I did it to self-soothe myself, to give myself the sense of care, because I had not cared for myself all day. I was not taking time to exercise. I was not taking time to walk. I was not taking time to be like, you kids go tend to your own entertainment. I'm like going to do something I enjoy for a little bit, right? I was saving that all up till I was exhausted at 8 o'clock at night. What am I going to pick up a hobby then? I'm exhausted. Like, I'm mentally fried. And so for me, the way I would meet those needs, and it really wasn't meeting them, but in my attempt to meet my needs, was ice cream and cereal,
mm-hmm.
and mindless television. And that's what I did for many, many years. And so if you find yourself in this pattern, it's not necessarily the food that's the problem. The problem is all of your unmet needs and finding a way to fulfill those needs in a way that probably involves some food, because food tastes good and there's nothing wrong with like enjoying some ice cream.
Well, and it's an instant dopamine hit, which is why we always go to it, because it's so fast. It's like probably the fastest.
It's accessible. But
besides online shopping.
Totally. But to your point, you're never going to get enough of what you don't really need. So like you said, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having cereal or ice cream at night, whatever it is you want to have. But if it's not actually filling the need that you're hoping to meet, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I so well said, Kim.
Yeah. So if you're somebody who, I know you've heard this, it's like, I balloon up the second I eat anything. If that happens to be you, there's a good chance you're an undereater.
Yeah.
So just a little bit of awareness, like think about the thoughts that you say to yourself or you believe about yourself, whether it's I'm not an athlete or things like this. And that'll actually tell you a whole heck of a lot about things that are like worth addressing for sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right. How about walking is for losers, but weightlifting makes you bulky. So what am I supposed to do? I don't believe that. Just for the record, I'm just saying something that's like a common trap. That's all.
Yes.
Yeah. People so often think like walking doesn't count. It's not enough. Like,
what? I know.
Mm-hmm. It is lame. Right. But for me, like, I have to tell you, when we just look, I actually have several studies right here, two meta-analyses that have come out in the last 6 months, showing the benefits of increased movement, as in walking more, to longevity, to you literally staying longer on this earth.
You add years by walking.
It absolutely is important. It is not worthless. It is not for, how do you put it there, for losers? It is one of the things, like, you guys, if you ever see my stories, like, I'm on there multiple times a week harping on people to get up and get outside and move. And even if you can't get outside.
I used to believe that though. I used to totally believe that. Like, when I finally, like, you know, gird up my loins to run. Like, and I would be running on the trail. I would see people walking like, oh, you're not an athlete, but it's cute that you're walking. Right. And now I'm totally the opposite where I'm on the trail walking and people are running. I'm like, you don't have to, like, you can't, if you want to.
Using all your muscle mass.
You want to, you don't have to. And I think some people, like, they run past me. I have like a CrossFit sweatshirt on. They're like, why is she walking? But like at the same time, I'm like, what ifs? Because walking is amazing.
Totally.
Yeah, I was trying to make a point the other day. I was into the group I run for women over 40. I don't remember what the point is I was talking about. Oh, I was talking about this piece of content I was going to put out. If your back's always hurting sitting at your desk, you know, you should be switching your position.
Oh, yeah.
Kneel, you can half kneel. And then in creating that, I was saying, you know, and you can get up every hour and just walk for 2 to 5 minutes. And so as I'm having this conversation with these ladies, I'm like, I'm not good at math, ladies. How many steps? Like because I tried it that day. I'm like, so I did it one time for 5 minutes. I got 500 steps. And as I'm doing this math out loud, I'm like, somebody check my math. Is that 4,000 steps in a day? If I did that once an hour for 8 hours, I'm like, that can't be right. So they're all texting back. They're like, your math is fine. That is right. And I'm like, that can't, 4,000 steps in a day. If you just get up for 5 minutes and walk around, it's probably going to give you better mental clarity too. If you're just sitting here, because I'll do this sometimes. I'll just sit and work for hour after hour at my computer, right? But there's so many easy ways to get more steps in, and it can literally make you live longer.
I love that. Well, and it's like part and parcel with this is the idea that like rest days or being unproductive is like, is such a problem, which I mean, all the positive changes that you're working to create and you want to see, they hinge so much on recovery. And kind of to your earlier point about kind of stung a little bit when you were like these, you know, young moms who give themselves completely. And then they end the night with like a drink, which totally impacts your recovery and your ability to show up with, you know, full capacity the next day. So it's just running yourself down. And we do this with lack of sleep. We do this with under eating. We do this with overtraining, all these different things. Right. And it's like that lens is your quality of life. Like the way you recover determines literally how good you feel.
Absolutely.
Emotionally and physically.
Yeah. Well,
and it's just incredible how, like, I think, and you probably feel this way too, Kim, and please tell me like if you agree, like the second we became a little bit more selfish with our time as mothers, the better self-care we had for ourselves. Because there is something about like getting something for yourself. Like, I know people are like, oh, feed yourself first and then feed your kids. It's like, oh no, I would never do that. I would feed my children first because, you know, they are my everything or whatever. But it's like, you know, you can't, you know, you have here, you can't pour from an empty cup. But at the same time, like, you know, like the flight attendant principle, like, are you going to put the oxygen mask goes on you first and then the person next to you, right?
Totally.
It's the same thing. It's like, if we prioritize ourselves, then we're actually better.
Well, you think about how this scenario plays out. You got like, you're feeding your kids and then it's like, oh, this isn't right. Or like, you didn't cut this right. Or I want something different or whatever. And how you react to that when you're like, ah, you were supposed to be done. So now I can feed myself. And like, when you react poorly, then you're like, then you shame yourself as a mother. And then the whole cycle just like continues, you know, builds.
I have a lot to say on this subject. This is something that is dear to my heart for so many reasons.
One, same.
I don't think I showed up the best for my children for a good part of their childhood because I was not taking care of myself. I absolutely believe that. I do think I'm showing up. So two of my boys are older and out of the house now. I might have one child left. She's a daughter. She's 16. I do think she's getting better from me. Emotionally, I think she's getting better from me. Example wise about how I treat my body, about like boundaries that I set for myself, you know, around my health and my sleep and all of these types of things. But here's another thing that I think is really important that I realized, gosh, a couple of years ago, even if doing all of this stuff that is making me feel so much better, like I'm better rested, I'm at a healthier body weight, I exercise, so my heart is in better shape, right? I mean, so even if none of this benefited another single human, if it didn't benefit my kids, if I wasn't a better mom, a better employee, a better wife, it doesn't matter because it still made me better. And I am an intrinsic value. It doesn't matter. It's this whole idea of like, we put the oxygen mask on so we can serve other people better. Didn't serve another person. You're worth it, ladies. You are worth it. People listening, if no one else benefits from you getting healthier, you feeling better about yourself, you're still worth it.
Well, and why, who's going to take care of you if you don't? Like, honestly,
no one.
Who out there, like even Heidi, who I know adores the hell out of me, she's not going to do it for me. She's not going to wake up and like take care of Natalie in a way that Natalie deserves. So it's like, why are we putting ourselves on the back burner? And I think so many women fall into the trap of like burning themselves down for everybody else to meet everyone else's needs and like not taking care of themselves. But then we also sit here and be like, and I'm not enough.
Well, it's totally. Like, well, and then, and like, I mean, as somebody who was built that way and when I'm stressed is still a little built that way. It's like, what do you do it for like to be recognized, like to be recognized and appreciated by other people, but how much would they have to do for it to be worth it to you, for you to live like that? Right.
Yeah.
And it's so, it's like one of the greatest productivity hacks I've found for myself and getting the things I want to get done done is pre-logging, so to speak, pre-logging rest time in my day, because otherwise it's that like I get overwhelmed by my to-do list because there's never an end point because I'm always adding stuff to the to-do list. Right. So if I know that like, nope, from, you know, at 7 o'clock, we're eating dinner and then we're playing games. That's it. And like, that's going to be my downtime.
I love that.
You know what I mean? It's a totally different experience than like run until you collapse, go to sleep, wake up, run until you collapse, you know?
Yeah.
That's well, beautiful. I love what you said.
We're being more productive and we're not like, we're
totally.
Well, and it's so interesting because you're talking about, you know, how like you're, you know, you feel like for your daughter, like you're showing up as a different, more improved version, not necessarily a better version, but improved version, right?
You're experiencing it better.
You're experiencing it better, right? Like your own personal self. And I think we, you know, as so many people are like, oh, I want weight loss to be a better example for my kids. It's like, how about showing boundaries and advocacy for yourself? That is a better example for your children than a couple pounds on the scale. First of all, you really shouldn't be sharing your like weight loss journey with your children. Like, hey guys, high five, mom lost 0.6 today. Right. Like, I mean, I mean, obviously come at me if you really feel like that's a productive way to like, you know, with your children. But I think that, you know, when my daughter knows that, like, I try to go to bed by 9:30 because I have to wake up at 4:45 to go to the gym, it's creating a boundary for myself. In my mind, I'm like, oh, I really should just wait till she goes to bed and then go to bed. Says who?
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, if she's studying because she can't manage her time well and she has to be up late, does that really make me a better mother if I stay up until she goes to bed? Like, I mean, depending on who you are, you might be like, yeah, actually, you really should. If your kid stays up till 1 a.m, you should be up with them too. Right.
Yeah. But what's good to know about that is your value. Like, you don't need to judge another person with it.
Agreed.
That shows you.
But what I also show her is that I have self-care for myself, that this is what I require for me to be able to do all the things, you know, like for her as well, included in that, that I can advocate for myself.
Yeah.
And like, I can pick that. Yes. Just like as she can pick what she wants for her.
Well, totally. And to your point, again, not that like everything we do to your point has to benefit our children, but that also shows her that you get to make a different choice that not, you know, that, and it's giving her that freedom. So, you know, peer pressure or whatever, or when she gets in a relationship, she still has permission to fill her own needs and do what is best for her. And same.
Yeah. That's big.
Well, totally. That's what we want for them, right? Like, I remember, you know, my son got 2 cookies from primary one day, and I was, and everyone was like, how come Baz gets cookies? How come he has 2? Like, he has, you know, he doesn't need 2 or whatever. And I was like, hey, why don't you share with them? Like, you have 2. He's like, I don't want to. And I remember, like, I was a little bit like, oh, like, a kind of like, it took me aback for a second. And then I was like, they're his. He can say no. He doesn't have to share them, because it's like, and how many times do we do that as like women? Like, oh, we have to give it all.
Oh,
it's not
totally.
Ours. We can't, it's selfish if you say, I want to keep it for myself. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like to teach them to be like, no, you can say no. You can also keep that for yourself. You can also put yourself first, because we need to do that for ourselves.
Totally.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So, man.
I know all the things.
Okay. So let's dive into real quick. I mean, not real quick, but obviously real quick. Well, I want to definitely talk about menopause and fat loss. So let's talk about my metabolism is broken.
Yeah, this is a big one. And, you know, for years, there was kind of this general idea that I could never find a number. You know, as I got more and more interested in helping women specifically in menopause, like, I could never get a hard and fast, how much does our metabolism slow? It was everything people, and I could see anecdotally, because I had worked with hundreds and hundreds of women at this time. I'm like, it's not slowing that much, because I'm not putting my women who are perimenopausal on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds less calories than the other women. And then some people are like, oh, it's like the amount in a cookie. I'm like, that seems more believable. But what I would generally say is, let's not even worry about it. We don't know how much it is. It's clearly not significant, but let's not even worry about it. then this last summer, there was this really big study that came out. Ponzer was his last name, put this big study out. They had this database of thousands of people from like 8 days old to 90 years old. And they looked at this database to see what happened with their metabolism over the lifespan. And what they saw is that from age 20 to age 60, it stayed the same. Metabolism was not declining. It did not start declining well into their 60s. And then it was only small. It wasn't until much later that it was declining even more significantly. So it's not declining. Our metabolisms are not declining in our 40s. And I know if people are listening, they're like, well, what the heck's what's happening to me then, right? The good news is it's not anything intrinsic to your metabolism. Menopause or your age is not causing you to gain weight. Your life is set up in such a way clearly that you are gaining weight. And so we can tackle all of those things. And with menopause, there's a lot of lifestyle factors. Now, for those of you who are not exactly clear, like what is menopause? It happens around average age 51 is when it starts. It is when you have been, and I'm there now, but I'm not fully in menopause yet. You know, you're fully menopausal if you've been without your cycle for an entire year. Okay. That's when you're menopausal. The thing that most people don't realize is that a time when women are highly symptomatic is actually in perimenopause, which is the years leading up to the menopause. Okay. And that can start up to a decade before, which means if the average age of menopause is 51 and it can start up to a decade before, we're talking 41, you could be perimenopausal.
I'm there. Everyone.
No, seriously. We just burst through the ticker tape. We made it.
I didn't know that. And I discovered a lot of my symptoms looking back. I was convinced in my mid-40s that there any day now the diagnosis was coming because there were crazy things happening to my body. I was like, is it going to be MS? Like, I'm clearly about to be diagnosed with something. Like, I'm tired all the time. Like, my temperature is going all over. It wasn't hot flashes yet, which is like the typical when people start realizing it. They're like, ooh, hot flashes, that I've heard of. But I was having, like, my hands were icy cold and then they were burning hot. I went to the emergency room twice for vertigo. I had no idea that that was one of these symptoms. So, you know, if you're having a whole host of symptoms in your 40s that feel like, what could this be? Look up menopause, talk to somebody who knows about menopause, like a menopause specialist, and look, they say there's like 36 symptoms. I think there's even more to be aware of, and start doing things like tracking your cycle. Like, is it starting to get further apart? Is it starting to get heavier? To really pay attention to this. You will also likely notice one of the changes that can come along in perimenopause is that you start having more fat in your midsection. It is not because menopause is making you gain fat, but the changes that happen as our hormones change as we enter perimenopause mean that where we tend to store our excess fat shifts. Okay. And it shifts to our midsection typically. So if you're noticing more belly fat, it is not saying you cannot lose that belly fat. That belly fat is lost the exact same way you will lose fat anywhere else. It's just now with this new fun stage of life, you tend to be storing it more in your midsection. It's a real thing.
And so I'm conflicted whether I feel kind of thrilled because that's where I put it anyway. So it's like, it's like a place that I'm aware of and I'm familiar with, or am I a little bit bummed because then it'll just be exponentially worse, but it's fine.
Well,
this is just my process.
It would only be exponentially worse if you gain weight, right? Because if you're not gaining weight, there's not going to be any extra there.
Aw, so thanks, Kim.
That's one change that happens in perimenopause. The other big changes that can happen, why is weight loss harder in perimenopause, is because we're so symptomatic. Mm. If you're a person, imagine if for any other reason in your life, like you're feeling really fatigued, you're struggling with anxiety, like seasonal allergies. I did not have allergies a day in my life till I was in perimenopause. Now I've got allergies. I'm struggling with anxiety. You know, you're having periods that feel really explosive. All of these things that you're just not feeling well. Mm-hmm. You're really fatigued and now you're trying to lose weight on top of all that. Is there any wonder it's harder? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's harder.
How about just life in general when you're losing weight? Not even perimenopause, right? You guys.
Yeah.
It's not an add-on thing. Weight loss isn't an add-on.
You take that typical weight loss is hard anyway, you add on all the symptoms of menopause. And then let's talk about what's happening in our lives typically at this time in our 40s. Right? What's happening? A lot of women are really coming into the part of their career where they're excelling. They've got a lot of added responsibility. Like, it's this high power thing going on. You've got teenagers to raise. That's stressful. And now your parents are aging. So you're dealing with aging parents. You've got teenagers in the home. You've got all this responsibility at work, right? You're like, oh my gosh.
So the anxiety is perimenopausal, right? Perimenopausal too.
And so all of this comes to a head and it feels like our bodies are rebelling and we can't lose weight. Well, in reality, what it comes down to is it is harder. We have to manage all of these lifestyle factors. So we work on like, how do we manage our stress? Are we now stress eating? How do we help reduce our stress? Do we have to get better at delegating and time management and boundaries? This is stuff like when I say that, like I do nutrition and weight loss coaching, like all those things I just said, like I have entire units in the course that I have with women about like, how do we manage our time and our boundaries? Because we've got to get better at it or we're never going to reach whatever it is, the goal that they've set physically. So those are some of the really big things that we have to work on. And then sometimes what we have to realize, if you're going through a really bad season with your symptoms, it's probably not the time to pursue like weight loss. It might not be the time to pursue like even like a big strength goal. Maybe it's a time to focus on like, I'm still getting in movement and I'm nourishing my body and I am resting more for this part of the time. And that doesn't have to mean your entire 40s, but I definitely have had seasons when I was really struggling with hot flashes. I wasn't asleep. I didn't sleep for like 4 months until I had myself medicated appropriately. So well, be gentle with yourself.
Yes. I love that. I love that you just said that. It's because I think there is, we talk about this in our program too. Like maintenance can be one of the most challenging phases to be in because like, who are you if you aren't chasing a weight loss or a fat loss goal or even, you know, even to your point, even a strength goal. So it's this idea of caring enough about how you feel to even table some of those goals and instead work on supporting yourself and really just being gentle with yourself, right? Like instead of, we have been conditioned to be like hard drivers when it comes to like nutrition and fitness, right? Like all of the inspirational phrases are like, you know, sweat is weakness leaving your body and like power, strength, move, you know, push through the pain or whatever. And like, there's a place for that, but it can't always be that, right? Like there also is a place for, again, resting when you're tired, understanding your own needs, and again, caring enough about how you feel to not add on a bunch of other things to an already full plate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that said, like you can still be in the best shape of your life in your 40s and 50s.
Totally.
Many people do it. It's totally about like, when is the appropriate moment to push and when is the appropriate moment to rest?
Exactly. And like we were saying earlier, like not all, your results don't only come from the push. Right. Your results come from the recovery as well. So totally, just because you're not losing fat doesn't mean that, you know, you're gaining fat, for example, or that somehow arguably like you're, you know, you have to give any of that up. There's also a place for maintenance and self, you know, just supporting yourself through those kinds of transitions. So good.
Well, I think also respecting the timeline of your goals, right? It's like everything isn't always instantaneous. Like everybody wants everything like yesterday. And it's like, you know, if you have to take off a season in order to like rest and recover and help yourself and like take care of yourself really, really well through these certain places in your life, that is respecting your goals.
Well, totally. And like
you're not saying never. You're just saying like, hey, right now I can't really take this on.
Well, it's like right now I've tabled lifting for a little bit while I work on my strength and balance, because otherwise, like, I'm going to be limited. It'll only get worse, right? So sometimes you just do have to take just a little bit of an off season in order to.
And the overarching is, if you're really doing this for your quality of life and your health, as everybody says, like, I'm doing this for my health, then, you know, let's look at it from like, hey, let's, God willing, you'll make it to 90, you know, a year of you eating more, lifting, whatever it is only going to benefit that future version of you also. So you can make it that far.
Yeah.
Right. Like same with strength training. It's like, if all of us stop strength training, we're not, osteoporosis is coming for you.
That's such a great point, Nat. Totally. It's like when, you know, there, some women do get really heartbroken when they can't be consistent in a fat loss phase because they have too much life stress going on. And it's like, I love that. It's like, but you're doing this for your health, right? Like, and that's like, that's a holistic perspective instead of just like, you know, your waist measurement.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think that as people that we, as women, spend as much time fretting about our health. Not that I think anybody should be fretting, but if you're going to be worried about something, like really thinking more about your health than your waistline is going to benefit you, because the things that we need to do to be healthy are going to be the things that are going to help you with your physique goals as well. So really focusing on nourishing your body well and moving your body in all the ways that are going to be beneficial for it, you're going to improve your physique as well.
Well, and not to always tie everything back to the patriarchy, but I feel like sometimes because we are told so much that we're overly emotional or we have too many feelings about things, that I think sometimes we're conditioned to just discount our feelings and discount what we, you know, how things affect us because we're being dramatic or whatever. And it's like, how you feel is how you feel. And it might benefit you to listen to yourself, just hear yourself out, you know?
Absolutely. I think we stuff our feelings a lot. And I think we'd stuff our feelings with food a lot, frankly, and in other ways. And actually giving yourself permission to feel your feelings, whatever they are.
Right.
And then to work appropriately through those feelings, like acknowledge what am I feeling and what do I need to do about this feeling, if anything? Is this something I just need to feel? Or is this something like that's assigned to me? I need to do something like, and what should I do?
Totally. Like to your point, I think one of the things what I didn't know when I was a young mother is saying things like, don't be sad. Don't get upset about that or whatever. Yeah. It's like, because I have spent so much of my life trying to control how I feel instead of trying to understand how I feel.
Yeah.
And you know, that honestly comes with the gift of time.
Yeah, right? I think so.
For everyone who's like dreading turning this age or dreading getting older, we can only say to you, it actually just gets better.
It really does. Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
Aging is a gift. Aging is a gift. And anybody who says otherwise, they're not there yet.
Right.
And the gift to age is also a gift. Yeah. Like thank your lucky stars that you might make it to 80 or 90. Like, I mean, it's like life is kind of fragile in a lot of ways. And I think what's interesting is like, you know, people are like, oh, would you want to be 20 again? Like, not really.
No.
Like that 20-year-old Natalie, like, was, I feel really bad for her, you know?
Me and too. I feel the same way about myself. I feel bad for 20-year-old Natalie. Like, I didn't know her, but I do feel bad for, like, yeah. I wish I could go back and like whisper some things into 20-year-old Kim's ear.
I know.
Absolutely.
But the best part is you kind of can. Yeah. You know?
Well, and it's true. Like, I guess I'm still having those conversations in my head because she's still in here a lot.
Well, and gosh, like, isn't that really one of the most incredible things is when you like look back and like, what did 20-year-old Kim and 20-year-old Natalie and 20-year-old Heidi need? Like, what would we have really told them? And then that's where you get to work from, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I would love to go back and be like, hey, you are an athlete, so you can't run. Okay. Yeah. Trust me, you might not really want to later. It's not that big a deal, right? And like, have some fruit, please. Enjoy some carbohydrates. Yeah. Like, care about your sleep. It's not a badge of honor to get like 3 hours of sleep and like exist the next day.
Gosh, you know,
like
seriously.
All these things, like, it's tell you whatever you would tell yourself. Take that to heart and like apply it now, right? Like you get to be a better, more evolved version of yourself every single year.
Yes.
If you allow yourself to.
And when we say better, we mean feel better because, you know, weight loss definitely, and that's not, of course, what you were saying, but weight loss does not improve you. There is no substitute. No amount of fat loss can compensate for a good relationship with yourself.
Yeah. And that's something that the gift of aging, like you just have more time to get to know yourself. And because you've had so many bad experiences, like, and that's one of the reasons I really do like working with women at this age. They've had so many experiences of what doesn't work to help them, whether it's lose weight, get stronger, feel better about themselves. They already know like that didn't work and that didn't work. And that wasn't that either. I've tried all these things. Maybe it's something else. So the wisdom that just comes with aging is incredible. And so like, I don't ever feel like a person who's trying to fight aging, but I do feel like I'm fighting frailty and I'm helping other people do that. I don't want to be frail, but I want to be older. Like, what's the other option, ladies?
Man, same page. Every now and then I see like a 13-year-old giving like nutrition advice on TikTok. And I'm like, you're so cute. Where's your mom? I want to talk to her. So I think what I love to like close with is like, you know, work on evolving yourself out of old thought patterns and ideals, because it's way more rewarding to like never chase the same version of yourself twice. So allow that for yourself. Like, we don't need to be looking back at like who this person was when in 25 or like pre-wedding or whatever it is. Like, work on like the newest iteration is going to be super rewarding if you allow yourself to.
So good.
All right, Kim Schlag, tell everybody where to find you and also pimp your podcast. Did I just say pimp your podcast? This is how old I am. I used the word pimp. Sorry, guys. That was not very PC. I'm not even sure if that's allowed anymore.
You can find me at Kim Schlag Fitness. My last name is S-C-H-L-A-G. You can find me on Instagram at Kim Schlag Fitness. That's the best place to connect with me. Or my podcast is the Fitness Simplified Podcast.
Awesome.
Ooh. All right, Kim.
Thank you so much. You
have been on my podcast, so you could start with that episode.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love it. Yes. Go find us over at Kim Schlag's podcast. Okay.
Oof, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoy that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps. So the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us at Instagram at ButterYourMacros.
On the web at ButterYourMacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at What's Up Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.